Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's all here.
A no-hitter. Grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment. Every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined by my NBC Sports Chicago teammates, Jason Goff and Rob Schaefer. Coming up on the show, we are going to break down a disappointing end to the Bulls' 2021 season, also get into detail about the player exit interviews and media access session with Arturis Karnišovas. We're also privileged to be joined by the latest Bulls Hall of Famer, Tony Kukoc.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Always recording, KC.
Here it is.
Okay. What's up, Jason?
What's up, fellas?
Thanks for being flexible.
I got nothing to do.
You have a pre or post game show to work to prepare for?
I don't have anything to do besides random Rush Facebook shows.
I was gonna say I saw you on the penthouse patio today.
Look at you! Yeah. I got people are like, "Goff, you're wearing sunglasses. It's not even sunny outside." And I was like, "Hey, nerd, it's a transition lens. Get your money up." my guys and girls are always there to chide me on the internets. But that's not why you call. Is this the year in review? Is that what this spot is?
Yeah, year in review. We got exit interview day wrap up, and AK speaks. We got lots. So take it away, Mr. Goff.
No. This is a collaborative today. Let's start with AK. He didn't mince any words. He's usually the guy that says this, that he's not happy with it. He mentioned mediocrity. You guys were able to ask him some questions. I'm appreciative of the way that Billy Donovan and Arturis Karnišovas handle things, because from our view, our vantage point, you can pretty much say what they said, and everybody, you know, there's no one mad about it. This season fell short. And Casey, I appreciate some of the stuff that you've written as of late and the stuff that you posted at NBCSportsChicago.com today, because short term, it's a swing and a miss.
Exactly.
Right? And a lot of this is Vooch trade dependent, right? When you make that trade, you got to get into the playoffs. And they didn't. And, you know, Kendall and I and Will have gone back and forth about Zach and COVID and what that was it 11-game stretch did to the team. I contend that this team was below average before Zach got COVID.
The last game before Zach went out, they were down 20 late in the third quarter to the Magic at home. Like, they weren't close to figuring it out when he went down. Now, it definitely derailed them, and it derailed Zach's special season, which is unfortunate. And maybe, you know, with more reps, and they could have figured it out in that time, or figured it out to a little bit better of a degree. But I don't know. I don't buy that as a sole explainer for why this happened. They weren't on a positive trajectory when that happened. Certainly that eliminated any possibility of getting there, but
they're not good enough. We're at the end of the season now. Guess what? There's some bad teams that made the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. So if you didn't make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, you are one of said bad teams. It's as simple as that. Like, we got to stop BSing. The dudes are telling you this. Yeah. Zach LaVine is telling you this. Arturis Karnaschovas is telling you. Billy Donovan has been telling you this all year long. Like, we've gone from week to week where it's been the turnovers, it's been the defense, it's been COVID. It's been everything like that for every other team too, mm-hmm. right? This team is more talented than sitting on the outside of the Eastern Conference playoffs. I'm sorry.
And we're not even to the playoffs yet. We're at the play-in. I mean,
right.
So you, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Sam Smith today asked Garrett Temple flat out, can you even fathom not being one of the top 10 teams in the East? And the way Sam asked it, you know, it's just it gives you pause. Exactly. You're like, really? This just happened? The Bulls didn't finish in the top 10 after adding an all-star at the trade deadline? It's just and Garrett answered it like you just said, real. He was like, no, I can't fathom it. I mean, it's hard for me to believe. He maintained that even before the trade deadline, the team was talented enough to make it in the top 10. We're not asking for
because they were in the top 10 before here. The trade deadline. They were What's in the that? Top 10. They were in the top 10 before the trade deadline. So, there's proof of concept like they were. And also on Sam's follow-up there, Temple did kind of say, yes, this was one of the more significant missed opportunities of his career to this point, which I think says a lot when you consider the scope of Garrett Temple's career that he believes in this program enough to want to be around next year. I mean, he strongly said that multiple times. But still, they came up short. I thought AK's evaluation of it in terms of like listing out the things that went wrong was fairly on point, was fairly apt. He talked about consistency. He talked about, playing games for three and a half quarters, but not playing a full 48 minutes. He talked about general consistency, the fouls, the turnovers, maturity.
The lack of getting to the line, which he said,
lack of getting to the line, yeah,
which he said is a sign of aggressiveness. So you know where his focus is. I mean, Billy's talking about being more physical. AK, you know, he loves talking about shooting, but he also, you know, the fact that he specified that they were last in the league in free throw attempts, and that's a lack of aggression. That's pretty telling, man. That's pretty telling.
Yeah, we've been dancing. Well, not we, but. There's been a lot of dancing around the same, the common refrain for the last two coaches. Last two coaches said this team wasn't tough enough in their own ways. Fred Hoiberg, Jim Boylan. Billy Donovan got dropped off here and used every adjective he could to not say that this team wasn't tough enough. But we know what the deal is. They traded for some tough guys. They traded for a tough guy from Boston who – you know, if Bulls fans were like, hey, Daniel Tice, what do you think of him? Like, oh, yeah, tough guy from Boston. And that dude came here and took somebody's starting spot and an important somebody's starting spot. So we can stop playing him talking about the free throw attempts and aggressiveness and all that. The Bulls are a bunch of talented, nice guys. And when the fight got brought to them in several different instances, you know, they didn't respond the way that people think they should. And whatever you want to call it, maturity, whether you want to call it lack of experience, whatever the case may be, a new roster, getting used to a new coach and a new way of life and a new culture, whatever you want to call it. The moment Arturis Karnaschovas and Mark Eversley showed up, everybody was on notice. It was evaluation time. You're supposed to have your first date face on every single game. And this is what they have to evaluate now. Their +8 wins is, you know, I mean – we thought it was horrible last year, right? So +8 wins, yeah. But
I wish it was +8 wins. It's actually +9 wins. I wish they had only won 30.
Right. They still have the 26% chance to get your man Jalen, right? But yeah. No, it's just listen to Stacey, listen to Adam, listen to people on the broadcast, listen to people who are covering the team like you guys. We've all been pretty much saying the same thing. I did not think this team would miss the playoffs this year. And when they started to slide in certain ways, like certain things you're not going to fix during the season. We talked about it, right? Their issues defensively. I know the numbers say what they say after the trade deadline, but there were times when defensively this team had the same issues that they had with Wendell Carter Jr. and Daniel Gafford in terms of, you know, not handling pick and roll ball handlers the way they should in terms of the efficiency and stopping those guys, right? And if we want to talk about drop defenses and all that, honeymoon's over. Like, it's up to Billy Donovan now to try to figure out how to make sure that this defense doesn't get exploited with Nikola Vucevic. And I think his defensive lapses and inadequacies sometimes are a little overstated. But if he's going to be out there guarding somebody on a pick and roll switch, which he didn't have to do a whole bunch of times, he's going to be taken advantage of. But defensively, this team has to get better. They have to learn how to take care of the ball better. And on top of it, they got to find somebody besides Zach LaVine who they can count on to create their own shot consistently, right? Kobe White's trying to figure out how to be a point guard and also be Kobe White. And at, down the stretch, we saw him play, you know, well. We saw him play better than he had in stretches during this season down the stretch. But what's going to change now? Because if you go out and get a point guard or whatever the case may be, now his role is back on the bench. So this is two straight years, fellas, where I can't tell you as an observer too much more than we already know. Like, I wanted to find out more about Lowry and Wendell last year. Coming into this year, obviously, one gets traded, one gets benched. You know what you found out. We found out what Zach can be. We found out that they can go out and make a big trade for a guy like Nikola Vucevic. But this team not making the playoffs this year is terrible. It's not a good thing at all. There's no moral victories. There's no, but we'll go get them next year. Those last two games were hell. they rolled people out there who they're like, all right, we might as well figure out how to get a pick a week after maybe they should have. So, yeah, man, this ain't supposed to feel good. Bulls fans are – I worry, fellas, that the Bulls fans are going to fall back into this, oh, man, I was buying in and look what my ticket got me kind of vibe, right? Like, they're excited about Pat Williams and Zach and Vooch, but this was this season missed the mark for sure.
Yeah, well, that's where I thought everyone kind of did a pretty solid dance today, because I mean you can't disacknowledge the failure of the short term goal that was not met, right? You know, trading for Vooch and not making the playoffs. You can't dress that up. But I do feel like, you know, having gone through the exit interviews that we did today with multiple players and Billy Donovan Sunday night and Arturas on Monday, you know, they did paint a pretty compelling picture of how this is trending in the right direction. Now, obviously, they got to do it on the court. It's just words right now. But when you have guys like Thad Young and Garrett Temple who have been around the league and have been in multiple situations, talk as positively as they did, not just about generalities, but about specifics, how good Patrick Williams can be, how good of a communicator Billy Donovan is, how open door of a policy Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley have, how empowering that is for players, et cetera, et cetera. The jump that Zach LaVine took, the confidence Kobe White is playing with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Again, just words, but specific, tangible progress that they feel will translate next season when, in theory, you have a more normal season, a more normal training camp, time to form chemistry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Again, we're just talking. They're just talking. This year was a failure from the trade deadline on. No other way to slice it. But I do feel like, to your point, Jason, and I sound like Billy Donovan there by saying to your point. But to your point, Jason, I do feel like, you know, for those fans that kind of see the big picture, there is still a lot here from my seat trending in the right direction. They have two all-stars on the roster and no other offseason that I've been covering, you know, recently, can you say that? So there is that.
And the culture seems to be in a better place than the previous regime. I don't think that's like carrying water to say that, just with the way that guys talk and the general morale and the buy-in all season. The problem for me is just the undercurrent of every piece of the case that things are going to be okay and things are going in the right direction is that the organization is all about winning. And you can be, and you could be motivated by that and make aggressive moves toward that. But until the results line up with it, it just rings hollow to me. So, and that's what makes this offseason so frightening. To have a 20.3% chance of jumping into the top four means you have virtually an 80% chance of losing your first round pick.
I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, the cap space thing is complicated, and it's probably a conversation for another day, but they're not going to be, you know, flush with resources necessarily to retool. Now, Arturas said today that, you know, we're going to use every avenue from the draft to free agency to trades to improve the roster in any way we can, which is, again, great to say. These are words given how close to the vest he's played every transaction he's made so far and how aggressive he's moved to make every transaction from the Billy Donovan hire to the trades to anything in between, you know, I'm willing to see how it plays out, but it's just tough when you don't have two firsts and that limits your ability to trade your 2022 and 2024 first, and you shouldn't want to trade, you know, extra picks anyway on top of what you've already done. And the cap space situation is a little bit nebulous and you just have so many holes to plug. I'm very much in wait and see mode. And, you know, as much as players in the building say that players around the league are going to take notice of an organization this committed to winning, it has to be followed with results, which is what makes this offseason so crucial. That tone was captured today by everybody who talked, even as, you know, the spin was put on it a little bit. And then, you know, the beginning of next season, especially the start, is super crucial too. So, I mean, that's the thing, like the season's over and everyone's sending out their like, oh, thank you for this, or, oh, it was a great season, or it was a challenging season for this or whatever. Like the work is just getting started. Like, so for us and for people in the Bulls organization. So I'll be interested to see what they do right now. I mean, you know, we've been over it everywhere you can go over it. It's absolutely a failure and it's hard not to feel down about it. We just got to see what they do next. Because these are the situations where you need a plan. You got to execute it.
All right, what'd you guys think of Billy Donovan's Sunday night exit presser? What stuck out to you?
I think, I don't know if people are, you know, painting Billy as someone who's making excuses by continuing to bring up the lack of practice time and the Zach LaVine COVID absence. What stood out to me is I actually don't think he's in like excuse making mode in terms of kind of trying to paint the full picture of the season and assess the season. He's pretty much the end of every answer that he gives on like a reflective question like that. He always ends it with everyone was on the same playing field. And, you know, his whole standard is the standard thing and they just have to be better. So that stood out to me. He's still a straight shooter and he still tells it like it is and isn't in like a scramble, push accountability onto other people. Like he looked inward for a lot of that presser talking about not only was he going to assess, you know, just general things he could have done better, but like specifically he brought up the shift in play style after the trade deadline to play so much through Vooch and to really shake up the way that the Bulls played to such a drastic degree, slowing the pace down, playing out of the post more. I mean, that's the interesting thing. Like we talk about the defense as if it's the biggest problem facing this team. And again, numbers don't tell the whole story here. Like we could have a more nuanced conversation about it, but they end the season ranked 12th in defense and 21st in offense. And the offense was ranked 22nd after the trade deadline. And there were a lot of good things or some good things that came out of the poster, like Kobe's improved play. Like if we can tie that directly to the introduction of Vooch, then that's a good thing. But ultimately, you know, Zach missing 11 games obviously doesn't help anything in terms of specifically the offensive rating post deadline. But that's a problem. That's a problem Arturis highlighted today. So, you know, Billy, all that's to say, like he was pinpointing specific things that when he gets a chance to kind of step back and assess this whole thing, he's going to look and see, you know, should I have done that differently? Should I have done that better? So I think you could appreciate that at least someone not, you know, pushing responsibility or blame onto other people, but rather centering themselves. so that stood out to me. It was pretty standard. I thought his reflections and hit the notes of what he's been talking about all season, which is generally has a disappointing theme to it, but that's just the way the year played out.
Yeah. Disappointing theme to a disappointing season, disappointing end to the season, at least. KC, Zach LaVine, the man has business that he has to tend to coming up here this offseason and next offseason for sure. What do you think Zach has been thinking since he returned from the All-Star game and obviously going through the COVID portion, the COVID protocol. This second half of this season hasn't been kind to him. And, of course, you know, nagging injuries and things of that nature. Zach doesn't seem like a guy who deals with or takes losing well. I don't know too many people who do, but he wears it, you know. And you could tell that the bubbly Zach that maybe you saw at the beginning of the season wore on him. And the season wore on this entire team. And I thought Billy made a great point. And I was happy that he pointed out the fact that these dudes ain't just suiting up, coming from the crib, going to play basketball. Like, They're touching down in these hotels and taking COVID tests at 3 a.m. and all the thing, all the rigors of NBA travel along with COVID protocols and the lack of practice time. Like it was, yeah, I know I said everybody's going through that, but that doesn't mean it was easy for everybody. It seems like Zach at the end here was very not just poignant in his comments, but I appreciated him because he's tired of it. Right. Like, everybody, evaluation mode for this organization is not only happening from the organization to the players, but it feels like Zach is in his evaluation mode as well. Am I getting out of bounds with that?
No, I mean, it's fair to bring it up, but I would say what I heard today, because I agree with you, your overall assessment of his tenor since the All-Star break and obviously since his unfortunate positive COVID test. But from what I heard today, I would be leaning the other way. I heard a guy committed to this franchise, committed to this future, committed to the partnership that he's excited to be forming with Billy Donovan. If Billy Donovan makes it through next season, which I think we all would agree is probably about as close to 100% as you can say in the world of professional sports, it'll be the first time Zach LaVine has gone through two consecutive full seasons with the same coach in his entire NBA career. He started, and he's really only started two seasons with the same coach. That was Fred Hoiberg, who didn't make it through that second season, obviously. So I heard a guy, excited to be building with Nikola Vucevic, excited to be forming a partnership there, and also, into the front office, into a coaching staff. Now, that said, you brought up the financial component to start, and we're going to have Rob chime in here because he had a fascinating detail that I don't want to spoil in his story on NBCSportsChicago.com, which we'll get into in a second. But I heard a guy who wants to get paid. We all remember that Zach had to go out and get that offer sheet from the Kings in restricted free agency in order to be on this current deal, which set up Rob, bump set Spike. He is currently overperforming. And Rob, why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, so the nugget that I had in my piece that you referenced, KC, thank you very much, was it, of the 28 top scorers in the NBA last season qualified scorers outside of the rookie contract guys. So Luka, Zion, Trae Young, and Colin Sexton qualify for that. Zach is the only person that next season is scheduled to make less than $20 million. You have to go outside of rookie contract guys. You have to go to Terry Rozier, who was 29th in the league in scoring this season, to find a guy that's making under $20 million next season. Zach was seventh at 27.4, I think is where he ended points per game. I mean, it's just amazing from the tone around, the conversation around that extension, the moment that the Bulls matched it to now, like it's really one of the best value contracts in the NBA. And I don't blame Zach at all with that as the context for saying, hey, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get what I deserve one way or the other. I didn't take it in like a negative or threatening, like, oh, I'm going to leave type of way, because he talked so much throughout his presser about, he said specifically about Billy that he was looking forward to working with him for years to come. He's always said at every turn, I love Chicago. I want to be here. People, players around him, Vooch said today that the one thing, one of the things that stood out to him about Zach was that he wants to win, as bad as anything, and he wants to do it here. But there's just an element where like the NBA is a business and this dude deserves to be making a lot more money than he is making. So that previews what's going to be a pretty interesting offseason from Zach LaVine's perspective, because he is extension eligible this offseason. For people that want the Bulls to max Zach out the first chance they get, it's not quite as simple as just throwing a max at him this offseason, because to give him the standard veteran extension that they are, allowed by the CBA to give him this offseason, they can only offer him 120% of his current salary to start the next extension. That puts him –
And he will laugh at that.
And he should. That puts him in, a starting salary with 8% increases at a max at $23.4 million for not next season, but the season after his current contract expires. And then you're talking for it comes out to about a four-year, $104, $105 million contract, which is just he's 26 years old. He's top seven scorer in the league. He's doing it a near historic efficiency. Like, he's worth more than that. There are other routes they can take. They could, as Eric Pincus at Bleacher Report first wrote a couple months ago, he's the first one on this, that the Bulls, if they are able to carve out, $14 million in cap space this offseason, they can renegotiate Zach's contract and extend him for what is his actual max, which is 30% of the cap. That would start at $33.7 million. So if they want to go through the machinations to clear the cap space and then use it for that purpose. They could choose to do that. They could also wait because, again, that standard extension that they could sign him to using his bird rights, they can't go any more than that until his contract expires. So they could next offseason let him hit unrestricted free agency, then sign him to his 30% max. But, and again, there's no indication that Zach wants to be anywhere than the Chicago at this point. But if you're letting your best player and the guy that you've invested so much in terms of resources building around right now, I mean, to me, it would make me queasy to let him go to unrestricted free agency next offseason, especially because you're in a prove it year as an organization right now. So nothing is, you know, necessarily certain in terms of what this team is going to look like next year. So it's a complicated situation. The point is Zach LaVine is underpaid, and his sentiment today was well taken that, you know, he should be looking for more and he should be looking for what he deserves, in terms of what his market value is, which, you know, if the precedent that he sent throughout his career is any indication, you know, who knows what the Bulls look like next season. But I mean, I wouldn't surprise me if Zach even took his game to another level next season, or at least was, you know, 90 to 95% of what he is this season, because he's just entering his prime and he's gotten better every year since he's recovered from the ACL. So that'll be a fascinating storyline. Arturis, I asked him about it today, how, if he planned to address it this offseason, how he planned to address it this offseason. And he kind of danced around it, just said everything's going day to day. We're excited to talk to Zach about the future, and that their exit interview was more about how this season went and what this off season is going to look like for everybody and how everybody needs to do better. Which Zach, I'm sure, would agree with, because again, like the dude just wants to win at this point, and this season is not, does not meet that standard. Although funny enough, like he did say today, was it him, Casey, that said it was the best team he's ever been on?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you just shake your head at a certain point. That's just unfortunate. Like, I don't blame Zach for that, but it's just an unfortunate reality of his career to this point.
Guess who else knows that Zach is undervalued and still regarded as a dude who, until he gets to the playoffs, is just a score from the people who don't watch him. Zach knows that too. Like, it's only so long before, you know, these years start to pile up where you're being referred to as the dude that you may not be. Like, he may be a championship level player who's never made it to the playoffs. We don't know, right? But that's the label, and that's the knock on him until he does. And he knows that as well. On top of that, I'm far outpacing my contract. Yeah, we're employed, and we all know that there is a point where you feel like, man, I'm getting the most out of this. And then there's times where you're like, oh, maybe my job's getting the most out of me. Like, I think Zach LaVine might be going through that. Hey, you know what? I'm out here scoring 27 a game, going 50, 40, and 84, and we can't even be in the top 10. That's the only reason I brought it up, because I've seen weirder happen. And when a guy starts to understand what he is, and I think Zach knows what he is, and I think the rest of the league knows what he is, and you're outperforming a contract, and you're waiting for money because you know it's on the horizon. Like, that's a pressure filled situation, because everybody, it's basketball. We need, like, this ain't football, this ain't hockey, this ain't baseball. If you are the best player on your team should be going to the playoffs if you're really, really good. Now, obviously, there's other factors that come into play, but in the end, when people look at this season next year or the year after that, they're not going to be like, man, remember when they dealt with COVID and Lauri Markkanen didn't perform the way they thought and Coby White was trying to become a point guard in this second year? They're going to be like, hey, man, remember those 7 straight years Zach didn't make it to the playoffs? 2020, 2021 was another one of those years. And that's the way that unfortunately and fortunately, that's the price you pay the cost to be the boss, right? He's the boss right now of this team, and he's not getting paid like a boss, and he's not winning like a boss. So I can understand how some of those things can find their way in to uncomfortable decisions. But like you mentioned, and that's why I asked Casey, because he, you know, when guys get to start talking about, you know, it's a business, please believe they are not saying this just, you know, flippantly, you know what I mean? But he understands that, yeah, I know all those numbers that Rob Schaefer just threw out because my agent and I have studied these things, you know? Like, so I hope for the Bulls' sake that they do everything to keep Zach as happy as they can, because I can't imagine what this thing will look like 2 years from now if Zach LaVine isn't here. And this last week, and I know, you know, my chaotic brain gets in the way sometimes, but this last week I was thinking to myself, like, man, when Zach was coming back, I was looking at this team like, you know, what if Nikola Vucevic is the guy you traded for because you're not sure that Zach's going to come back in 2 years? So you need a star, right? Like, you gotta protect your franchise as well. Like, AK and Mark Eversley have a job to do as well. And I'm not saying that they're out here looking at it like a Zachless world is on the horizon, but at the same time, this team needed to make the playoffs this year. So all of these questions would be moot. We wouldn't be asked, like, we're asking these Lowry questions. Like, there's more people asking, well, you know, he might be able to. If this team made the playoffs this year, and it'd be like, all right, we can fill somebody else in that play. Like, there's still the unanswered questions on this team that date back now to 3 years ago. And that's why we're still here. Now, it's a new GM, a new president of basketball operations. So you're supposed to look at it differently, and I do look at it differently, but it's still these are the pieces that you have in place for a little while.
Hey, guys, wanted to take a few seconds to tell you about Geology. Geology is all about personalized skincare for men. It's easy to use, simple, 4 products, and I promise no chemistry degree required. What you're going to do is go to geology.com, take a quick diagnostic test, tell Geology what kind of results you want to see, and they're going to set you up with a dermatologist-designed regimen for you in real time. It's simple, it's effective, the results speak for themselves. They've gotten over 3,000 five-star reviews, Best of Grooming Awards, featured in Esquire, Rolling Stone, Mashable, BuzzFeed. These guys are legit. They're here to help you have the best skincare regimen that you could possibly have, look and feel the best that you possibly can. So make sure you're going to geology.com for the best personalized skincare experience that you're pretty much going to find anywhere.
Zach saying that Patrick Williams and Kobe White are invited to workouts. To me, that means you better get your ass wherever Zach LaVine is, whether it's on the moon, whether it's in Seattle, whether it's in L.A., whatever the case may be. Patrick Williams is in dire need of a real NBA offseason because what we saw in the second to last game and then the last game, like, you couldn't have told me that Pat Williams is going to score 24, his career high, and then come out the next night and have 8 or 9 shots against a Bucks team that didn't have Giannis on the court. So that is calling all cars. It ain't just Kobe and Patrick either, whoever plans to be on this team. And that's what I want to see, because it ain't an invite. It's, hey, we need to get this together so this won't happen again. So we won't be embarrassed in this position again. So Kobe, Pat, you know, go ahead and book that ticket to wherever he wants it to be now, because I was glad that he mentioned that, though. I was glad that Zach got that out there, because leadership isn't just screaming at guys in the huddle, right? He knows by now. And Billy Donovan has been talking about it. Like, you could hear the way Billy has talked about it throughout the year, about pulling Lowry to the side or doing 2-man game and all that. Now you see a guy who's being a little bit more vocal to you guys and also to the fan base about what he plans. So I thought that was good. And I think Patrick Williams and Kobe White need to take heed.
Yeah. And we've been over the how big of an offseason this is for Patrick Williams and how big next season is going to be, not just for him, but for the franchise. You know, this trade, the unintended or intended consequence of it is that he needs to be your third guy. And everything that his teammates and everything that we could kind of see is that the flashes are there that he could be. But, you know, Artur said it today. He has all the tools. It's just a matter of, you know, if he chooses to use them or if he learns how to use them in the right way. So we talked about Summer League, you know, a little bit speculatively, or Casey, you've been pretty sure that this is going to happen for a while, but it's very, very much clear listening to these people, these guys talk, that Summer League is going to be a thing. Pat's going to be there. I will be watching, as I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast will be, with rapt attention to that. And we'll be hunting YouTube for the pickup run, the next pickup run montage that everyone's going to freak out over.
Can't wait till Spencer Dinwiddie is telling me Pat Williams is the best player on the court again. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Did you say future Bull Spencer Dinwiddie?
Yeah.
Boy, we're going to do free agency another time. We're going to do free agency.
That's from a week from now, 2 weeks from now. And by the way, I can't wait for the Summer League MVP to be bestowed upon Patrick Williams the same way it was for Doug McDermott and Tony Snell, ladies and gentlemen. Shout out to Tony Snell.
That's 50-50-100 club, Tony Snell.
Hasn't missed a free throw in 2 years, apparently. Good for Tony.
That's amazing.
It was shaky there for a little bit, and he's stabilized this thing. So good for Tony getting that NBA money out here.
And he's going to the playoffs. So
yeah,
the 4-5 matchup.
That's the other thing too, man. The Atlanta damn Hawks fired their coach and then was like, hey guys, we're good. Let's play harder than everybody and still make shots. Like, yeah. The things that have happened in this Eastern Conference this year, dog, there's no way in hell the Bulls shouldn't be in the playoffs. No way. Like, the more I talk about, I haven't talked about this in this entire day because of this, because I knew I was going to get here. The Hawks and the Hornets and all these teams, they're not better than the Bulls. I'm sorry. They're not. They're not, talent-wise.
Well, it's funny. It's funny because the Bulls won the season series against the Wizards before the Wizards took out. They played all their games early in the season, but won the season series against the Pacers, swept the Hornets. Yeah, like won the season series against the Raptors. I think swept the Raptors too. But yeah, I mean it's a disappointing season. Again, there's only so many ways we can slice it. It's about what's next now. But before we go, Jason, you piqued my you turned a light on my brain when you were talking about unanswered questions since the start of the rebuild. And I want to lob one up to KC now because he lobbed one up to me a little bit earlier in the episode. Lauri Markkanen today was a topic of conversation, although he didn't speak to reporters in a press conference format today. Arturis Karnišovas was asked by KC how he planned to approach Lowry's restricted free agency this offseason, which is obviously, you know, one of the bigger storylines of the offseason, entering it here. And he called Lowry, let me find the exact quote here. He called Lowry an essential part of the team that is a part of what we're building here. And said, I thought Lowry had a good year, thought he was more efficient, 40% three-point shooter, fact check, true. It was the best three-point percentage of his career. Shooting comes at a premium in our league. I'm looking forward to free agency and talking to his representation. So that, yeah, I wish this was a YouTube episode.
Yeah, I can't see my face on this one.
that is certainly not to be taken 100%. Literally, that matches the tone of how Arturis Karnišovas and even Billy have talked about Lowry since, you know, they both got here, and, you know, it yielded really, really, you know, good early season returns. And then the season wears on, he's in trade talks at the deadline. He gets moved to a bench role as soon, you know, one game after Vooch gets here. Like, actions speak louder than words at this point about what the evaluation of Lauri Markkanen is. But the reason I want to lob to KC is because even though Lowry wasn't made available to media in a Zoom press conference format today, you got the chance to talk to Lowry today. And he gave you kind of his perspective on what, you know, how he's going to approach his restricted free agency. You can find that full write-up on NBCSportsChicago.com. But KC, when you talked to Lowry, what were the impressions that you got from him? What is Lauri Markkanen's mindset right now as he enters a pretty uncertain offseason?
Well, first of all, that Arturis quote made me laugh because the last line should have been, and I tried to trade him at the deadline. but anyway, we kid, Arturis, we kid. You know, I got to say, man, I got a hold of Lowry today on the phone, and I expected the typical bland, you know, dial it down, monotone Lowri Markkanen, and that was not the case. Let me just read you this one.
I've read those quotes. Dude.
My thing is, I think I've always been a team first guy, and I think now it's time to look at the business side of the game. I feel like I'm only 23 years old and I have a lot of basketball ahead of me. It's a good opportunity to look what's out there for me. Be a focal point. I think I have a lot more to offer. Welcome to the new Lowri Markkanen.
You know what's so funny, KC? You know what's so funny? When I read that, I was like, I like this Lowri Markkanen. Like, yeah. Where has this Lowri Markkanen been? And I've been among his most vocal critics. I think a lot of it's justified. But yeah, that was.
I know Jason likes that Lowri Markkanen too. Although he wished he would have seen some of that Lowri Markkanen on the court at times too, as he's biting.
That'd have been swell.
You're gonna wrap it up, Jason. But let me just say this. So my takeaway was. This is a person who I don't need to really go into like a Latin translation here, who's very excited to get to restricted free agency and see what teams are going to throw millions of dollars at him, because he can be a focal point and has more to prove than a reserve role for the Chicago Bulls. Now, you never say never in this league. I've said this many times. Crazy things can happen. I'm just throwing out one crazy scenario. What if the market doesn't materialize for him? What if he doesn't like the Bulls offer? What if he plays on a qualifying offer for 1 year and goes to unrestricted free agency next summer? I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just saying you never say never in this league. But as we've hinted at and alluded to all along, this has always kind of felt like it's headed towards a divorce. And Lowry's comments about as emphatically to me led me to that conclusion than at any point I've reached all season. Jason, wrap it up for us. I like your take on Lowry because, as you always say, like, it sounds like you're hating on the guy, but it's just because you know how good he can be. So anyway,
hey, if we don't talk about players, we don't give a shit about on this pod. As simple as that. Take it however you want to take it. If you think I'm always banging on Lowry, fine. You know, I have five uncles and a dad who was very hard on me, and I appreciate all of them. And it's because they saw something in me, right? And I'm not his dad nor his, you know, uncle, by the way. Lowry's a grown ass man, and he's got a family that he has to take care of and do what's best for him. Let me tell you something. I started to see the departure from this being what it was supposed to be in the year before this last year. When Lowry got thrown into an offense that allowed him to be deferential and be a catch and shoot guy, and we talked about the assisted field goal percentage, that's not Lowry Marketing that I saw at Arizona. Wasn't Lowry Marketing that I saw the first 2 years here. Something happened, and if this is what playing out the string looks like, cool. If he has assured his agent and some other team that, hey, I'm going to be the dude that I was. This wasn't a good fit. It happens. You know, I've talked to NBA players before. We're like, yo, I hated it there, and I just wasn't in it, and I need to be in it. I'm not saying that's Lowry. Right, I'm not saying that's Lowry at all. But something has to explain for where the talent level is and where the production level was. And I'm not just going to chalk it up to, you know, Lowry. I wish Lowry the best. You know what I mean? I wish Lowry the best because I still think he's a talented player. Listen, if Julius Randle is going to mess around and get MVP votes this year, I'm not saying Julius Randle and Lowry are the same guys, but when you have a certain pedigree and you have a certain talent base, like a certain foundational level of talent, these things are possible, right? You get a coach who trusts you and he puts the ball in your hands and he puts things around you. I never thought that Julius Randle would be the leader of the greatest defense in the NBA, right? The best defense in the NBA for a season, right? But we've seen Tibbs do this before, right? I mean, Carlos Boozer was a starting power forward on the best defensive team three straight years. I believe that someone will look at Lowry, like Lowry believes, and Lowry's agent believe, and say, hey, 7-foot shooter who could put the ball on the deck for more than two dribbles, doesn't like to post, doesn't back people down. If he could be looked at as a mini Kristaps, people would be willing to pay for that. So, and obviously he's, 4 or 5 inches shorter than Kristaps. But, yeah, somebody's going to pay for it because somebody thinks that they can get the best out of him. You know why? Because people believe that there is still best left in him. That's it. That's it. And AK can say that because if that market – you know, doesn't pick up the phone the way Lowry hoped it would, he would love to have Lowry back on a number that's manageable for them. They would love to. So why burn that bridge? I could dig it. All I know is these last couple of years, Lowry Marketing had a prime opportunity to be one of the tent poles to an organization that's steeped in tradition and championships. And the NBA can't wait to come back around too. The NBA is just – you see this – basketball gasm that's going on because the Brooklyn Nets and the New York Knicks are in the playoffs together, right? And the Lakers, like the NBA, the NBA office is just running around. Just, oh my God, just pouring champagne, like Chris Boshing themselves, just pouring champagne all over themselves because they got those markets. When Chicago gets back to where it's supposed to be, I thought the Lowry market would be a determining factor and reap the rewards of that. Now, we'll see, you know, whether it's – I don't know who's got cap space, so I'm just throwing teams out. Whether it's New Orleans or, you know, Sacramento, wherever it may be. He may – San Antonio. Right.
Spurs, yeah.
Right? And yeah. That's the thing. If he goes to San Antonio and gets coached up by Pop, it looks like a, you know, a retrieval story for the ages.
Well, so, like what I was going to say when you were making the point about Julius Randle, it's like if Lowry Marketing goes somewhere else and thrives and flourishes – that's not going to be the first time that's happened in the NBA. Oh. So, I mean, this happens all the time.
Zach LaVine.
Yeah. circumstance.
Wow. Yeah.
Opportunity.
Yeah. Hoping, yeah. Fit. You can hoop. You just didn't hoop here.
Exactly. So, yeah. I think we all agree that Lowry's talent is quite high. And like you, I hope it works out for him wherever he is next season. I hope it works.
Yeah. No, it's never been a grudge. It's, and people have like, oh, you don't like Lowry. I'm like, it's the opposite. Like, I like the Bulls. So Lowry is very important to something that I like. You know what I mean? It's kind of like watching a TV show with your girlfriend. It's like, hey, I like you, so I'm gonna watch this show. You know what I mean? Like, I like the Bulls. So Lowry Markkanen being good was key to that. He wasn't what I thought he was gonna be. And I bet you if you got Lowry alone and him sipping on whatever he likes to sip on, even though if he drinks, I bet you he would tell you these last 2 years wasn't him either. So it's as simple as that. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, but if I am, you know, everybody knows where they can find me on the internet.
Cancun on three.
Right, right. Oh, don't worry. There will be a podcast from a sunny destination. And I'm gonna be revving it in, boys. No doubt about it. All right. Anything else in the notes? Yeah, you wanna do the boys to men? It's so hard to say goodbye to Cristiano Felicio. Well, like, nobody wanna do that? Or I met Felicio's realtor. She lives in my building. Yeah. Yeah, it was cool to talk to her.
Where's he buying next year?
See, the breaking. See, always reporting. Always reporting, my man Casey Johnson. All right, we'll do this again soon. This was fun. Now we get to talk about all the projections and, ooh, Rob Schaefer's numbers machine is going to be going crazy this offseason. I can't wait. I can't. Look at you. Look at he pulls out the Zach LaVine stat. He's saving it for his column. Yeah, boy. The young goat strikes again. All right, for Rob Schaefer, Casey Johnson, our man Tony Gill. Tony, we love you, man. We love you. We're thinking of you. We will reconvene this thing on the next pod. So for Rob and Casey, Tony, Tim, I'm Jason. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on the Bulls Talk podcast brought to you by Coors Light. As always, be safe and take care of each other.
All right. There he is, live from Croatia, the newest Bulls Hall of Famer, Tony Kukoc. We can't thank you enough for joining us today, and obviously incredibly thrilled for you. And we want to start with just your reaction when you found out the news.
Thank you, Casey. I'm absolutely thrilled. It's just overwhelming. I was actually just outside with a couple of friends, and a phone started ringing, emails started coming. What's up was buzzing, and it's just a happy day. It's just a happy day. I'm actually in Croatia with my mom and dad. I'm glad that my dad is still alive so he can share this with me. The champagne was open for this occasion. But it's just I think it's just a great ending to my basketball playing career. It can't be more perfect than it is.
Fantastic. And it's a long career, so let's run through it. I mean, everyone knows about your Bulls years, which we'll get into a little bit, but don't sleep on your European career, because you're one of the most dominant players ever over there. And just kind of talk us through some of your memories and some of the things that stand out from your time before you came over to the NBA.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Actually, 2 days ago, I went to see my ex-team. They obviously playing the playoffs here. They started the playoffs and they're playing the ABA League. So getting into the gym, that's the gym that I started. And it just reminded me for the all those times when we practiced, getting in as a 15-year-old kid. The only difference right now, my jersey is hanging there. All the trophies are there. Some of my pictures are around the place. And actually, after the game, when I came home, Jerry Reinsdorf called me, and he broke this great news, because maybe it was in a script. It was a destiny or something, but I'm totally taking it.
Yeah. What kind of pride do you feel? You know, you're part of a obviously hugely influential European contingent of players that came over and started, you know, helping globalize the game. Guys like Arvydas Sabonis, Marcinis Šarūnas Barcelonis, Vlade Divac, Drazen Petrovic, Dino Raja. So
you know what? We were the first wave of players that kind of decided to give it a shot, to try. It was something new. It was something that we didn't know, maybe didn't even understand, didn't know what to expect. But we knew that we were good basketball players. We had experience in playing Olympics and playing the world championships against the guys who we heard and we thought are going to be the first draft choices. They're going to play all-star games. They're going to carry the NBA league. So just playing against them, we could measure how good we are. And it was, for us, we decided it was a time to give it a shot and try.
But that's...
I think we were right. I think it was just a time, and I think we were right. And all of us, in a way, proved it. And I'm glad that we were pioneers. Obviously, we had obstacles. There were things to break in order for today's players to come in and be trusted in their skills, in their knowledge in the basketball and all that. So I'm very glad it happened.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, people don't understand, like, there's a huge amount of sacrifice involved in this too, because you're dominating over there and you come over to a new league where you have to prove yourself all over again. And in the Bulls situation, except the bench role, and you're like a dominant superstar over in yeah, Europe. So,
but I understand that we were all into unknown. It was unknown to us what to expect there. But in the same time, these guys didn't see us, or the coaches didn't see us. It wasn't, YouTube wasn't available. All the games were not available. Maybe occasional videotape of some games. I first time I met Michael and Scotty, obviously, at the Olympics in 92 in Barcelona, and it wasn't the greatest experience for me. And judging according to their first game, they probably going like, oh my God, do we really need this? But ended up over the years, right now I can say it, being a Hall of Famer, that I proved myself to them, I proved myself to the coaches, I proved myself to the fans of the Chicago that I was worth taking a chance on.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, and let's touch on that, because Scotty's already tweeted out how much you meant to him, and I just talked to Steve Kerr and Bill Weddington, and they described the impact you had on the teams. And here's a fun fact. Think about the Hall of Famers on that second three-peat now. It's you, Michael, Scotty, Dennis, Robert Parrish, small role in the 96-97 team, two coaches, Phil and Tex, and a general manager in Jerry Krause. That's kind of a loaded team there.
Yes. It's just I feel awesome to be part of it. And talking about it, I was always kind of joking a little bit, in a Troy movie, they're talking, oh, I lived in the times of Achilles and Hector. So I was always thinking like, oh, I'm going to say one day I played in the times of Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and this guy. But now I feel more equal to them. Just being a Hall of Famer, I feel like, okay, I had more than a little role in that. And I can't thank him enough. Maybe it was, I always think it's a luck. But everybody says the harder you work, the luckier you get. So being a part of that team, it was just absolutely awesome. I can not remember every single game, but a lot of games, a lot of practices, a lot of stuff just comes pouring out thinking about it. And I would love all of them to be there, and they can absolutely feel like they are part of this, because they are part of this, from coaches, from players, owners, everybody. Should feel like they're part of me getting into a Hall of Fame, because they were part of it.
Very well said. You say you can't remember specific games, but we're going to bring up a few for you because they all have a common theme. Reggie Miller hits a shot and bows to each corner of the stadium, and you then top his game winner with your own game winner. Obviously, the well-publicized incident where Scotty was upset that the last play wasn't called for him and the against the Knicks, and the last shot's for you, and you hit the game winner there. And then, you know, the Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals in 98, you guys were on your last legs. That was a fantastic Pacers team. You score 14 of the Bulls' 21 points in the third quarter when just everybody was on fumes. What about your game allowed you to be so clutch at the biggest times?
I don't think I can point out exactly what, but I think it's just a comfort to be a part of that team. The belief that the teammates, the coaching staff believes in me. I think that brings the maximum of every player when he feels as like being a part of the team. I don't know how exactly to explain it, but when the ball comes to your hands at the right time, then you go like, okay, they expect things from me. They know that I can do this. And then you give your max, and things just happen. The right things just happen at the right time. That's how I would explain that. Because you're practicing the hard. They're forcing you. The only way to explain it, Michael and Scotty and Phil, they force you to practice hard, to play hard, to give your max every single day just for those moments. So when those moments happen, I don't want to say it's expected, but in a way it is. And you're ready to perform.
Yeah. Now you've kind of touched on it. We're just going to quickly go over your assimilation process here. I mean, you kind of touched on it, you know, your first meeting of Michael and Scotty in 92 in Barcelona, and they saw Jerry Krause and not you. So they decided to attack you. But what was that process like trying to have to earn their respect, knowing how accomplished you already were in your career?
But I kind of knew that. If I was going into some other team, some team that was barely into playoffs, of not making the playoffs in the NBA, then I would say, okay, I'm coming in equal as the rest of the players, getting a chance maybe to grab a bigger role, or maybe even getting into a starting lineup or something like this. But you're coming into a Chicago Bulls, three-times world champion. So you know these are accomplished guys, and they all have their parts. The lineup is already there. So I had to find my way how to earn the minutes, earn the respect from each player in the team, obviously from the coaches as well. And I kind of got myself ready for it. Maybe the thing that Michael retired helped me in a way. I hated the fact that he retired because I was looking forward to play with Michael and with the team. But the fact that he wasn't there right away, and I got the bigger minutes and starting roles and playing probably my natural position more than I played when he got back, helped me to establish myself in the team.
Well said. All right, let's just quick hits here. We're going to run down the Hall of Famers. Give me your quick answer to when I say Michael Jordan, you say?
Jarac, which in Croatian means goat. And I think my opinion is, I can't judge the previous players and everything, but I'm glad I was there and just practicing with Michael every day helps me get to that decision. I think he's just the greatest of all time, and he'll always be there, not just because of his achievements, six finals, six championships and MVPs and all that, but the way he approached every single day, every single practice, it was something that I'm glad I was a part of, and you can't do nothing but admire.
Scottie Pippen.
ultimate, absolutely ultimate teammate. I would take him anywhere in any battle against anybody.
Dennis Rodman.
The same way as Scotty. Absolutely two guys that I always say that can help you, both of them, most on the both ends of the floor. You can play blind with these two guys. They were so good at the both ends of the floor, so unselfish either way, and it was a pleasure to play with them.
Phil Jackson.
Well, the Zen master. I love the way how he tried to approach every individual as a human being, not as a basketball player. He had his ways. He would challenge you. He would find the kind words as well. I probably, if not the best coach in two, three best coaches I had on the both sides of the ocean.
Just two more. Tex Winter.
I love Tex. I think, and to me, still the triangle offense is the best basketball system I ever played in. For the player that understands the triangle offense, it gives you so many options, so many positions and everything to play in. And I believe when Tex started trusting me inside that thing, it was just nice. We had great conversations about it. At first, he would go like, "DK, no, don't. Okay, great shot. Keep shooting. We need more of it." But yes, I love Texas. And again, I think the triangle offense is the best basketball system I was ever part of.
And Jerry Krause.
Well, it's a person that believed in me, that insisted on bringing me to the Bulls. My hat's down to the floor to him for making me believe that I can get to the NBA, to taking chance on me, to taking all the cheap shots and everything from everybody else, and sticking with me. I hope I brought some kind of pride to him and his family.
And I know you, and I know we're not trying to be, dismissive of other people, because I know how close you were to so many other players and coaches and teammates and et cetera, but we just were focusing on the Hall of Famers. So, and you're the latest one. So don't be humble. Describe Tony Kukoc, Hall of Famer player, to those of us listening right now.
No, I don't really know. It's still so fresh. Maybe it's going to hit me. I'll probably, my legs are going to be the jello when I have to talk about stuff, because I'm not comfortable in front of the large group of people talking about myself. So I would probably mention everybody else if I don't forget. So that's what actually happened to me getting into a FIBA European Hall of Fame. I was thinking so much about the previous coaches and not to miss anybody, I forgot two coaches that I won everything with in Europe. So that's how crazy. So basketball is a team sport, and you got to be ready to sacrifice your game and to sacrifice yourself for the good of a team to make these achievements. And I was lucky or fortunate enough to be at the right place at the right time and have a great coaches to teach me how to play the game, to teach me fundamentals of the game. Had absolutely unbelievable teammates in Europe as well, in United States. And but when all that comes together, I guess getting into the Hall of Fame is possible after all.
Well, go enjoy this with your family. Like you said, it's so cool that your parents are able to be here for this moment. And we can't thank you enough for your time, and congratulations.
Thank you, Casey. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.